It's Monday, April 15th, 2013, and welcome to episode 149 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
I'm Mike Joy.
Happy Tax Day, everyone. Here in the United States, it's Tax Day, so this is your last chance to get those taxes in. We've got a little bit more of a solemn topic to talk about today. Since it is Tax Day, the thing that popped into my mind was death, taxes, and online accounts. And we're going to be discussing how some of the larger corporations like Google and Twitter and Facebook are starting to think about managing accounts after in the event of one's death. So a little bit of a sad topic there, but it's something that we have to face eventually. So for our tech picks of the week, I think this time I'm going to do a blog post and share some of the things that I've been doing over the past month. And Mike, what do you have?
I have a cool little fitness technology device to talk about.
Okay. So I should mention that Cindy's not here today. She's actually doing a presentation down in Southern Illinois. She is back from her trip from Alaska. So hopefully next time we'll get a little bit of an update with what all she was up to. So here we go. The title of today's show is Death, Taxes, and Online Accounts. And today, I thought we would spend just a little bit of time, since it's kind of been in the news in the last week or so. I think it was Ben Franklin that said, nothing in the world certain except death and taxes.
Right.
And I just happened to come across an article last week from Google talking about, do we need to have a digital will for all of our accounts?
Right, and it's I think it's a new area that no one has really thought about until now. In fact, even here on campus, we've had the unfortunate event of losing some of our professors and staff members to the point where we've readjusted a lot of our policies and documentation to address the issue on what happens in the event of the death of an employee.
Right.
And it's difficult because it's also you want to be – you want to be the most open with the next of kin and family, but we also run the line that, like, our email accounts aren't really the users, it's the university's property.
Right, and it's a, very solemn, very, very sad occasion that, it's certainly going to happen. And the bigger companies like Google, I'm starting to see, you and I talked a couple months ago about possibly doing a topic on this, and it's something that's inevitable, no matter what business or school letting you are, it's going to happen. And I think the bigger companies like the Googles, the Twitters, the Facebooks are really starting to think about that because last 5 years, a lot has changed, 5 to 10 years with all the cloud computing and moving the accounts. And I think last time I saw Twitter had like 700 million, they might be a billion users now. I don't know.
Yeah.
Google, billions of people around the world.
And the sheer size of the data volume that's consuming for these companies and a lot of it's virtual and you can make things a lot smaller, but it's still, its physical footprint has got to be gigantic.
Yeah. And they just keep adding servers and storage space and just by the semi truckload full of these storage devices and things. They just come in with big forklifts and just stack them on top of each other. Right. But I do think that they're starting to worry a little bit. And this has been a relatively short time because kind of Google's attitude is you just save it out there and it's out there forever. But I think that definition of forever is starting to change a little bit, especially on the corporate side of things, because they're realizing that, these are resources that it's going to do nothing but grow as we have more people enter, every year signing up for all these accounts. At what point do you look at the account management? And that's the article. We'll make a link in the show notes. The name of the article is Prepare a Digital Will for Your Google Accounts. And that's kind of, I think, where they're coming from.
Right. And it's pretty interesting, too. I think maybe a year or two ago, I heard actually it was probably on the radio, probably NPR, about how there's companies emerging and it's probably more robust now that will actually take care of your digital assets after you pass away. They will log into your, they will take your credentials and log into your Facebook account and do updates or provide very specific messages that you left maybe in a will or some type of testament before you passed away.
Yeah, and I was reading that 70% of Americans do not have a will.
That's probably true. I mean, I have one, but yeah, it's really outdated.
It is outdated for me as well, so this conversation's kind of had me thinking maybe I need to go back and, especially for the digital assets, because as we move the analog into the digital, you know, the digital realm, how do we pass on our assets from, you know, one generation to the other? And really, right, that model has changed. You know, do we really own music? Or are we subscribing to music? We're leasing it. So back in the day, you know, I could pass a record collection on to my son. Right. But how do I pass on my iTunes?
And your MP3s. And,
you know.
Yeah. And, you know, it was interesting, too. I read an article in the Wall Street Journal from December 2012, and it talked about how there is financial assets in this digital world, you know, with, especially, it's funny, but with your online gaming, maybe like if someone's in World of Warcraft, or they have a special, you know,
gamer points
that they acquired, you know, your family could turn around and possibly sell that on eBay for
the magic cloak,
a couple hundred dollars or a couple thousand dollars, so your family could get some money from that.
Yeah, well, that's a whole other conversation, like the Bitcoins and everything else going on. But yeah, it is kind of this weird evolution as we've taken the analog and all the problems of the analog world. We're just now starting to realize some of the consequences that we've not thought about in the past with the digital world, because they have to be figured out.
Right. And, you know, it's also you need to think about who you're leaving behind, too. Facebook has it's actually a pretty neat policy that they have, is that they'll memorialize your Facebook account, and your timeline will end, and no one can do any updates, and no one can ever access the account again. But anyone that has either the newspaper clipping or maybe a copy of your death certificate can submit it to Facebook, and as long as they're your friend, they can memorialize your account, which runs into the problems your next of kin cannot get in there. And if there's certain pictures or information they want to get off, they can never get that information.
Right. It's a tough call, because what I was reading in Google, and like I said, I don't think they have it figured out. They're just starting to, you know, kind of probe and see where to go. But you mentioned naming a digital executor,
right,
kind of like your physical assets would be. But they also, I believe, are starting to see some things in the settings that, you know, what do you want to have happen in the event of your death? And that gives the user the right, you want this to be permanently deleted,
right,
or not. You know, some people may not want their Facebook account passed on, you know, to the next of kin or whatever,
sure,
for various reasons, you know, privacy and things, because we live in a times where we've never had to face this with all this electronic communication that is quote unquote private within your own circles. Could then suddenly, you know, if you inherited a Facebook account, suddenly see every chat and everything. It's just, it's a lot to wrap your head around.
Right. And it's, you know, also your personal, you know, privacy and protection too. I mean, there may be some things that maybe you want your spouse to see, but maybe not, you know, your kids.
Right.
Or some really private stuff that not everyone you want to see.
Right.
Maybe not even your wife. Maybe you just want your kids to see. So that's why you need to get this taken care of. And then having a digital executor doesn't have to be your will, the executor of your will, because you don't want to have someone that's not technologically savvy to be part of your digital executor, and they're not going to know what they're doing.
And we should say that neither one of us are lawyers, so you know, obviously have to consult your lawyer on all of this. But this is just a subject that I think that we need to start thinking about. And back to the Facebook, you know, if you did inherit that, there are going to be conversations with other people within that circle of friends. So there's just a lot of things to think about. You know, if I'm having a conversation with a Facebook friend, I'm not even thinking about, you know, whenever the event happens, that somebody might be able to see that conversation.
Right.
So, and everybody has their own different versions and levels of privacy. But there are going to be consequences and things in the future. And the other thing that kind of brought this topic up was in the last week or so, Roger Ebert passed away.
Yes.
You know, the public film critic. And I did see the Chicago Sun-Times memorialized his robertebert.com. And kind of adjusted the website.
And, you know, he's probably maybe the driving factor from Google about this, because after he had cancer and had his surgery, his only way to communicate, they said, was through social media. Mm-hmm. And if it wasn't for that, it was his only voice he had left. Mm-hmm. After his surgery and everything. Mm-hmm. Which is great that we're in this point and stage in society that you can still communicate even though you don't
have a voice physically speak. Yeah.
And reach and touch a lot of people. But what do you do with all that? What do you do with, is it now, his talks and stuff, who gets the rights to that?
Right.
It's hard to say
right. And
I don't think it's really been brought up until probably now.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's a tough problem to wrap your head around, and there are just so many different tentacles and things that, we're not even thinking about the consequences and things. And with our children today, literally from the moment of birth, that first picture posted out there on Facebook, I mean, it is going to be a digital life for them all through their school years, the electronic records and everything, testing scores and all of that. We talk about digital footprints today. I mean, they're just going to be.
Right. And it's not like you could go up to your parents' attic and there's your picture book, your baby picture book or their wedding book. It's all going to be online. It's where's this hard drive? Where's this account that logs me into Google Drive or, some other cloud device, Dropbox, that gets me to all this information? And like I said, it really needs to be considered.
And the same is true with Facebook and the Googles. I mean, they have that same stance because it is the individual. So, okay. Other things, that you're kind of thinking about as far as evolving, we talk about retiring accounts and things like that and just kind of giving up some of the server space and the resources and the usernames. And we talk about like Twitter and Facebook with billions, potentially billions of users. So, how many Bob Jones are there, in the world? And something else I think the solutions, as usual, in the usual cases, we're going to have a hybrid model of, some things in the physical world and some things in the digital. Those picture books, print out a physical copy of the picture book or something to pass on.
Or, it sounds old school, but burning on it. It's funny to say this now, but burning onto a CD but put it in some type of physical media.
Right.
I mean, granted, I think CDs have a shelf life of 50 years before they start to degrade, but it's at least there. And I think, maybe in 50 years, it'd be hard to find something to read that device.
Well, I can tell you from personal experience, I'm a little bit older, but I remember doing things on, punch cards and then the floppy disk. And I did a lot of journals and things on 5 1/4-inch disk. There's no way that I'm going to get that. Even if I could read the disk, I couldn't find the old word processing program that I used to create those. And I don't know that I was smart enough back then to have the foresight. But I did physically printed copies of those, and I'm so glad that I did, because I can actually go back and read, the physical paper. But I certainly wasn't thinking about that, back then. We live in the moment, and it's like, things are going to stay this way forever, but certainly they don't. So, okay, so I just want to, we'll just go ahead and wrap it up here. It's a very solemn, serious topic that nobody wants to talk about. As I said, 70% of Americans don't have a will. We kind of think, if we do, we're going to die. And it's like, if we don't, we're going to die.
Right. And I'm like I said, we're not lawyers, but I think a lot of us is like, I have next of kin, so everything automatically goes to them. And that may be true, but do you want everything to go to them?
Yeah. I'll link to another article, and this is from back in 2011, but the name of this article is "Tell Your Family You Love Them, Write Your Will."
Right.
And of course lawyers are going to be saying that, but as I said, it is a serious topic. It's going to happen, and everybody has their different levels of privacy. And if you choose to have everything deleted, that's your choice. If you do nothing, I believe that's just kind of the state of limbo right now with a Google account or something.
Right. I think from that article, it said like if it's you can select how long if you have an extended what time of inactive period that you want, and then they'll remind you, and then you set up like if it's been inactive and I don't. You don't hear anything.
So they're going to handle it as an opt-out policy that if you don't tell us otherwise and if we don't hear from you in 5 years, that gives us the right to completely delete the account.
Well, I don't know if it gives them the right, but
or whatever
at least,
it is.
You at least sign up and say you sign up for this and that per this sign up that you said if it's inactive for 5 years that you gave us the permission to delete it after we've reminded you and heard nothing from you.
Right. And like I said, the big companies are starting to think about this because I think they're realizing that, you know, we cannot keep up with this pace that we're doing.
It's probably unsustainable.
So if you have other resources and things, we'd love to hear from you. So you can send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu and, let us know what you think. Technology pick of the week this week is a blog post series that I've been working on over the past month. I completed what I'm calling Lessons Learned from 30 Days with a Surface Pro Windows 8 Tablet. So I've got a blog post out there along with 29 others because I did one every day, which is quite a bit of a commitment. So if I do that again, Mike, try talking me out of that.
I saw a lot of tweets on Twitter.
So. Yeah. So this one, because the Surface Pro tablet is so new, I wanted to really kick the tires hard on it. And I looked at it through a teacher's eye, and I wanted to explore the creation potential, and it's all there. Two things I really, really like about the Surface Pro is, number one, the full-sized USB port, and number two, the digital pen, which provides so much flexibility. So I've actually done a post or I've completed a post out there on the artistic side of the Surface Pro where I attempted to draw a horse using the digital pen in a program called Sketchbook Express, which is free in the App Store, the Windows 8 App Store. And then I've also created a lot of screencasts, videos, some very processor intensive, which is kind of where the Surface Pro separates itself from other tablets. It's got the Core i5 processor, so it's a very nice option for that. And then also for music creation software, I done a post, I think day 24, it looks like here, I did making music on the Surface Pro. Podcasting, of course, I'm editing our podcast on the Surface Pro. I'm able to take it out of our digital recorder on the SD card, plug it into my USB. And again, that digital pen is so nice on editing the podcast because you can kind of just take, I kind of call it painting. You can like paint what you want to edit out of the podcast. So that one's nice. I also played around a little bit with the Xbox controller. I don't know if you saw that one.
Did you have a chance to use the chat pad that comes with the Xbox controller? I was wondering about that.
I was a little disappointed because I used the standard one that came with, because here's where my mind goes. I think, I can be walking around the room with the Xbox controller in my hand with my chat set plugged into, the wireless controller, podcasting. And yes, it did work, although the quality of that headset was unusable, of course. But I had a friend that had the more expensive, like the $150 3D surround headset. And that one sounded it was an extreme gaming headset, and that one sounded really nice. But that's a lot of money to spend on a headset.
And I can see the teachers up teaching and they're on an Xbox Live chatting with their friends.
We kind of chuckle at that games. But I don't think we're too far away from some of that out there with this online education and things going on. So I just kind of had a series out there, and what I got the Xbox controller for, what piqued my interest with that was I also loaded the Worldwide Telescope program, which is a partnership between Microsoft and NASA, and they've taken all this NASA data, and literally with the Xbox controller, I can plug it into the Surface Pro and fly through the universe like a spaceship. Nice. So it was really neat having that experience and being able to freeform explore, just pre-packaged stuff, but go anywhere you want. So that's what started the Xbox saga with all of that. So
I remember when the the Xbox, you had your own separate Xbox Live account. Like, it wasn't synced up to Microsoft at all. Like, yeah. It was the Microsoft name on it.
Yeah.
And now it's...
Well, in a month or two, we might be talking about the new Xbox, where it will be required probably to have that. They're talking about online all the time with the next version. So, but anyway, that post is out there. I really have gotten a lot of comments. So thank you if you've posted comments or emailed me about that. And then, of course, the other big thing was I was able to wirelessly connect it to an HDTV so I can walk around the room completely untethered by wires. And for a teacher, that's a great option. So that's my tech pick. I'll link out there to the 30 days with a Surface Pro Windows 8 tablet. So, and you have a little device in front of you. So what do you have for us this week?
Well, I got this little device last night. And
Brand new.
Today's pretty much my first day with it. It is actually a pedometer by Fitbit. And their website's fitbit.com. And here at Eastern, they're starting, we call it the Step Up program. And you form teams and you just kind of track your daily steps, basically your daily activity, and then like you get bragging rights if you're on the team that has the most steps over, I think, a 4-week period or something like that. So
is that a website that you, or do you just manually enter the things that?
It's an Eastern website where you enter.
But do you upload the data from there, or do you just like do a summary post?
Well, for the Eastern part, you can use any pedometer for it. It doesn't have to be this Fitbit, but. Being the techie guy that I am and also interested in fitness, I got this Fitbit, and it's pretty cool because it has an online account, it has a dongle, you know, that you put in your USB drive, but it's also Bluetooth capable and can sync to
your phone, your tablet.
Right. I have an app on my iPhone, and then you can connect it to Android also, and it does more than just track how many steps. It tracks distance, calories burned. It also has they have some other different types. This is the low end pedometer. It's about $50, about the size of a quarter. And they have some more expensive ones.
So do you just put that on your belt loop? Is that what you do?
Yeah, this
or shirt pocket or something.
Yeah, you can put it pretty much anywhere. The tracker
just clips on.
Right. I've just been putting mine, inside my pocket, like clipped on the. The clip hangs on the outside and that's on the inside. And it seems pretty accurate. The company has a scale that these things can link to. Like I said, the other devices can track your sleep cycles. It's pretty all-inclusive. It tells you how many steps a week you should have to maintain a good fitness activity level.
Now, I was looking at the screen earlier. It said 0.95. What was that? What's that mean? Is that
distance. That one's distance. So, and then it has it does the time, steps so far.
Do you have to reset it, or does it just keep track day to day?
It just keeps track day to day, and you can manage it all on your online account. Online account. So far today, I've done 2,207 steps since 7:30 when I turned this on and started it. And I've walked about a mile today so far, which is nice, and have burned almost 1,000 calories. And then it has a little one that gives you a smiley face. And sometimes it sticks its tongue out.
I don't know if I want one of those.
But, it's pretty interesting with this. I try to work out 6 days a week. And, I don't have a whole lot of time to spend a lot of time working out.
Right.
And so I try to get devices that make my time more efficient and to keep me, motivated to go to the gym. And I think this will, the Eastern's program is just trying to get people in the mindset to be healthier, maybe, park a little farther away, take the steps as opposed to the elevator type mentality.
Yeah. Well, it's tough, especially for those of us in technology, because you're behind a desk so much.
Right. Yeah. We're pretty sedative now. For most of us.
Now, you said they had different models of things. Does this have GPS?
I don't know.
I know some of the jogging ones, the apps and things you see, which is kind of neat because it would actually measure elevations and jogging trails and biking trails and things like that. But I'm hearing more and more about them, so I think they're getting quite popular.
And like I said, they have a couple different models. This one's about the size of a quarter, I would say. I think that's how they advertise it. So it's pretty small. Comes with everything you need for it. There's no addition, like the clip and everything, just to hold it. It came with it. It's just nice. It's all-in-one package. It's always nice where you don't have to go out and buy extra paraphernalia so you don't lose it or whatever like that.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you very much. That wraps it up for episode 149 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. To leave a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment on the Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, this is Tom Grissom.
I'm Mike Joya.
Keep on learning.